Hi, everybody. Welcome to Outbeat Radio on KRCB Windsor Santa Rosa, a program that focuses on issues by, for, and about members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, queer, and questioning communities. You can hear Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m.
This is Living Proof, and we're your hosts. I'm Dr. Diana Grayer, and next to me is my co-host and wife, Sheridan Gold. Tonight, our guest is Stephen Zolman, Mayor of Sebastopol. Hello, Stephen.
Well, hello. I'm very honored to receive an invitation to talk with you guys tonight.
So happy to have you on. Stephen is also a social justice attorney and an Army veteran. As a former San Francisco juvenile public defender, Stephen continues to provide representation and advocacy to secure mental health resources for youth facing complex mental health traumas, especially those who are low income, BIPOC, queer, and differently abled. He is a co-chair of the county's Child Care Planning Council and meets regularly with those in our educational system. So glad to have you on.
Thank you.
We are really looking forward to speaking to you, Stephen, in more detail and learning about your life. But first, here's news and events with Outbeat member and our engineer, Greg Moralia.
This is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio News for the week of January 5th, 2025. Former President Jimmy Carter died last week at the age of 100. He was an ex-president for so long that you'd have to be in your 60s to have voted for him. At the time of his passing, he had achieved a platonic idea of what a former commander-in-chief should be, a thoughtful advocate for human rights who was willing to pick up a hammer to build homes for the poor. When it comes to gay issues, Carter is best known for saying at the age of 93 that Jesus would have been perfectly fine with marriage equality. Carter came out in favor of marriage equality in 2012, and his comments did attract some attention, particularly from anti-LGBTQ+ evangelical leader Franklin Graham, who said, quote, "Jesus would kill gay people, not marry them." When it comes to gay rights, Carter deserves a fair amount of credit. He was really the first president to take positive and concrete steps towards acknowledging the importance of gay rights. During his administration, the Foreign Service lifted its ban on gay and lesbian personnel, a huge step in removing the lingering stain from the McCarthy-era witch hunts. In addition, the Internal Revenue Service lifted its requirements that many LGBTQ+ nonprofits state that homosexuality was a diseased pathology. At the height of the Anita Bryant fearmongering, his administration was also the first to invite gay activists to the White House. The move was controversial and ultimately contributed to the Midge Costanza, the closeted gay-lesbian official who issued the invitation, deciding to step down. But Carter didn't quash the meeting either, which would have been the politically easy thing to do. In the state of Michigan, Democrats are trying to push through a bill that would enshrine same-sex marriage into the state's constitution. The move comes amid fears that the U.S. Supreme Court could overturn its 2015 decision legalizing marriage equality in all 50 states and calls from at least one state Republican congressman to make, quote, gay marriage illegal again, end quote. While the Supreme Court's decision in Obergefell v. Hodges declared that state laws banning same-sex marriage are unconstitutional, Michigan is one of several states where vestigial laws or constitutional amendments banning same-sex marriage remain on the books. According to Fox 2 Detroit, voters in the state approved a constitutional amendment stating that, quote, "the union of one man and one woman in marriage shall be the only agreement recognized as a marriage or similar union for any purpose," end quote. And that was passed back in 2004. Last year, Michigan State Representative Jason Morgan introduced House Resolution F, which, if approved, would strike the 2004 language from the state's constitution. Before going to Michigan voters, though, the resolution needs support from at least two-thirds of the state legislature, which Morgan says will be an uphill battle. Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer seems to be supportive of the resolution and responded by saying, quote, "any attempt to strip away gay marriage is wrong. Here in Michigan, we protect fundamental rights because no one should be fired from a job, evicted from their home, or unable to marry because of who they love," end quote. And in Chicago, a man convicted of stalking and extorting young gay men on the gay dating app Grindr, as well as other apps, is headed to federal prison for 52 months. Omar Uwadi, 29 years old, pleaded guilty in May to 22 counts, including cyberstalking, interstate communications with the intent to extort, and unlawful transfer, possession, or use of a means of identification. Court records document a spiteful campaign of extortion by Uwadi in 2019, using apps like Grindr and Snapchat to target gay and bisexual men. In March of 2019, Uwadi solicited nude pictures and video from an Ohio State University student he met on Grindr, along with his cell number. He told the victim, quote, "Pay me $200 and I won't post the pics, videos, and number and name online," end quote. The young man didn't pay up, but rather than move on to another victim, Uwadi sent him a text with a link to an online platform where he uploaded videos of the student engaged with sex, along with personal information. The pattern continued with a 17-year-old that Uwadi met on Snapchat back in April of 2019. The minor, who claimed to be 18 at the time, sent Uwadi sexually explicit photos. Uwadi again demanded payment with a threat to expose him. This victim, too, declined. Uwadi responded by sending the photos to the boy's mother and other family members, friends, and classmates. He also created a public Facebook page where he posted a photo of the young man engaged in sex. In all, 8 young men from Ohio, Colorado, and Washington were victimized by Uwadi. For Outbeat Radio News, I'm Greg Moralia.
And if you just joined us, we are talking with Stephen Zollman, mayor of Sebastopol and advocate for our youth and so much more. And we look very forward to learning about you and your life, Stephen. Thank you so much for being here and taking time out of your busy schedule.
Well, thank you again for including me.
Yeah. Oh, and Happy New Year. It's our first year. You are our first guest of 2025. We are honored to have you on our show. Happy New Year, everyone. So, Stephen, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, your passions, your hobbies, what you do in the world?
Well, thank you again for having me. And yes, a gay boy growing up in the middle of the Midwest, and at that time trying to do the best I could to navigate what was happening there, and realizing the fact early on that I was gay and trying to look around to see how well that would be accepted or not accepted, learned a lot. And it was a journey, and it definitely provided the impetus to figure out how to advocate for myself and other marginalized people growing up in that area. So that kind of launched me into wanting to become an attorney and, of course, needing to figure out how I was going to fund becoming an attorney. So that sort of segued into going into the service, which was a whole nother journey, but successfully completed that, went to law school, and have done my best to continue advocating on behalf of marginalized folks.
Yeah, I like that because I remember meeting you on Facebook. So we're Facebook friends. And I love that about you, Stephen, because when I would post something about racism or homophobia or something like that, you always would respond in some intellectual way, but very supportive. And I felt that vibe from you. And I really appreciated the work that you were doing out in the world as an attorney, as you're talking about it.
Power of social media. And definitely glad that we connected. And yeah, for me, it is all about intersectionality because, I mean, we're queer, but at the same token, we're not just queer. You know, it's like we are all of different races. We're all of different socioeconomic status. We all have different abilities. And in the current climate that we're all facing, I think it's important for us to rally our strength together. To do what we need to do to look after us and, more importantly, to look after our youth so that we can give them the best future that we can give them.
Something you said earlier when you were introducing yourself, you said you went to law school and that was a journey, and then you, to pay for it, you went to the Army and that was a journey. Is there a way you would be willing to share a little bit of your journey going into the Army, being an Army vet, and then paying for law school and going through law school and having that? Could you give us a little a synopsis of your journey?
A synopsis, yes. Yeah. So as I kind of indicated, a gay boy doing the best I could in the Midwest. My parents were not affluent. And so some things happened, and I was left with the choice of going into the military to see if I could get funds from that to go to law school. So since that was the only option, that's the one I took, because a lot of my family members went into the military and they sort of launched their lives from there. So I did find myself going into the military, knowing that I was gay, knowing that this was way before Don't Ask, Don't Tell. There was a journey, and not necessarily in the best way, as you could imagine, going in knowing that you were gay. But it definitely cultivated a feeling of, again, needing to find similarly situated people that understood layers of oppression and understood the consequences that if you were found out, you would be discharged and it would be in a very cruel way, and that that would be an impediment for me to continue on going to law school and receiving a lot of other benefits. So, like I said, it was a way for me to unite with similarly situated other marginalized folks, whether they be a different race. We didn't discuss social orientation. We certainly didn't discuss what it could be if you were thinking that you were trans, and doing the best I could. And the upshot is I survived and I moved on.
Were you able to, you said you guys didn't mention sexual orientation, but you sought each other out because you both, you or the folks you sought out were marginalized in some way. Did they know you were gay? You just didn't talk about it?
Oh, in the service when I was full on doing my duties, oh, absolutely no one knew. It was 100% no one knew because it was too risky to even think that you could trust someone else. Having that sort of, realistic danger was always felt. So as soon as I could get off the base and go into, thank goodness I was next to a metropolitan area and I could go to gay bars. Nevertheless, it was always a risk. And so when I say that we found each other clearly off base and we did the best that we could. There was no ever giving any inclination that you were gay on the base at that time.
How many years did you serve?
Just two. I was given the chance of like, hey, you could stay longer if you wanted to be an officer. I'm like, hey, I'm not sure I really want to do this at all. I just want to earn enough money to move on with my life. So I did 2 years and that was enough.
So you were able to earn enough money to go to law school. That's so wonderful.
A substantial amount. Well, it didn't fully cover everything, but it was a step in the right direction.
You're really focused. I mean, you knew exactly what you wanted to do.
I needed to figure out a way to, I don't know, in a lot of ways, save myself and save a lot of other people that I knew existed out there.
Well, getting back to your small town, it was Indiana. So, how was it with your family? Did they know?
Another journey. And similar to what, I know we all experienced because we're all getting up in our years. It was not a welcoming community. My mother was raised Catholic, and then she met my father, who was Baptist, and so there was a lot of things happening about that potential merger. But wherever you fell, on the Catholic side or the Baptist side, being gay was not allowed at all. There would be lots of consequences, fire and brimstone, the whole bit. Moving along after I left the Midwest, a close friend of mine who I used to date in law school became positive. And when he became positive, it was a very brutal way. And it was multifocal leukemia, takes over your cognitive processes. And I can't say that it was the main reason why I left Chicago after law school to come to the West Coast, but it was definitely a driving factor. So yeah, that's basically how I landed here on the West Coast.
It was probably different than in Chicago, I bet.
Yeah, I knew that there had to be, a brighter future. And even in Chicago in the early 90s, sitting in a bar association meeting, talking about like, hi, should we fight for marriage equality? Should we, shouldn't we? I'm like, in my own head, I'm like, oh, why shouldn't we? And let's do it now. But I'm surrounded with others that are like, I don't know. Maybe we should take a more cautious, experience. I'm thinking, even marriage is not everything. And it's like, what about all the other rights that our heterosexual peers have, right? And I'm like, oh, that's going to be too much. So that was yet another reason why I went to the West Coast, in addition to looking after my friend James. So, yeah.
So your friend James pulled you, got you over here to beautiful California, San Francisco.
Indeed, indeed. And so, as we all do, we live through, our loves. And no matter whether they're in this realm or another realm, we still give gratitude for that. So, yeah.
Yeah, and so you landed in San Francisco, and then immediately that's when you started working with the youth.
Yeah, I knew I always wanted to. And even before I left Northern Indiana and left law school, I worked as sort of, I don't know, whatever they called us, counselors and locked juvenile units, and just did the best that we could, not being licensed, not having a lot of experience in any realm. But it definitely was like, yes, this is what I'm gonna do. Like, I don't know why these youth are locked up. My estimation, they shouldn't be locked up. They should get services, and we should help propel them out of this current system into, yeah, better, happier life.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about the traumas that those kids go through. And for you as an attorney to be sensitive to that, if you can speak to that, that would be wonderful.
Yeah, and I mean, once I was lucky enough to accept a position at the San Francisco Public Defender's Office, and in particular the juvenile system, it was because of my experience in law school. It was also because I worked at a mental health advocacy group in San Francisco for a year. And with that nonprofit, we were charged with going into all the locked psychiatric units. So it was adults at San Francisco General, it was St. Mary's for the adolescent, locked units. And it was to advise them of their 5150 rights. I was like, wow, this is rough, to at least secure enough services for them to get out of confinement and move on with their lives. So yeah, I was feel very fortunate to be able to have had that opportunity at the San Francisco Public Defender's Office Juvenile Division. And, a lot of that is part of, like, once you're a public defender, you're always a public defender, and you could always move around communities and find your tribe. And so I still do. I might not be practicing criminal law or juvenile defense law, but I still do the most that I can in the civil realm, most in child custody situations, and definitely needing the resources of licensed clinicians, because my experience is, unless you have a licensed, experienced clinician to do the assessment, to come up with a diagnosis and a treatment plan, it's rough. It's rough trying to get children out of custody, and it's tough to be able to have to help a judge decide which parent is going to better help the youth. So pairing up with licensed clinicians, there's not enough of you, but when we latch on to you, it's a tight hold.
So, I mean, it's nice to hear you talk like this because it seems like you got some kind of psychology background to understand deeper issues with the kids. So, is there something there that we need to know about?
Yeah, one of my undergraduate degrees was in psychology, and for being a veteran, was able, fortunately, to take advantage of going to Golden Gate University and secure at least 12 hours credit. And through that, I met a wonderful professor of juvenile psychology, and in quick order, I did what I needed to do to become an intern and start earning my hours as a play therapist for youth in the Oakland Elementary School District. So I feel very fortunate to have had that experience, and giving me impetus to maybe work towards getting all of my hours in so that I too could be a therapist along with my JD experience to basically help, again, advocate for youth to move forward.
So, play therapy, could you explain that to our listeners?
Yeah, play therapy is used for children that have been traumatized, in my experience, on multiple levels. Racism shouldn't be too much of a big thing in Oakland. Racism is alive in all of our communities, and especially in Oakland. And then layer it on if they're thinking that they are exploring other things, their sexual, however they want to put it forth, whether they're gay or whether they're thinking that they might be trans. It is a way for truly young kids that are experienced like multiple layers of that trauma to not have to vocalize, because a lot of the traumas happened when they were pre-verbal. So the play therapy is a way for a licensed clinician to be able to sit with them in a calm space where hopefully they feel grounded and safe to do what they want to do, whether it's a sandbox, whether it is manipulating toys. And for licensed clinicians, you're kind of aware of what it is that they're trying to demonstrate is their past trauma. The experiences I had with sand and play therapy, they would bury toys, and then they would have a story of why it is that this toy needed to be buried and why that object needed to be buried. And for me, it was profound in the fact that, they're really just trying to work it out, to do the best they can, to let an adult know that they need help, and in the best way that they can to say what type of help that they need. So that's my definition of play therapy.
All about the unconscious. So, are you really planning to get your MFT or well, yeah.
I am on that track. I got 75 hours while I was doing the internship in Oakland. And yeah, right now, finding my way into the current position of being elected, as many electeds will tell you, it's not necessarily the amount that you would think that it would be. It can be what you put in, and I feel honored to be elected. And so I have taken on a lot of different positions. And so I've sort of been continuing along to become licensed as a clinician, not necessarily fully on a side burner, but a little bit on the side burner. And also my law practice too, I sort of put that a little bit on a side burner because I do enjoy being an elected, and I do really enjoy reaching out to marginalized communities and their leaders and the nonprofits and the political groups to figure out what I can do, because honestly, people don't know. I am currently the only gay man elected in the county. And I share that responsibility with two lesbians, and one of which is a fellow council member in Cotati, and one of which is our superintendent of our school districts. And so there's not a lot of us going around. And so whatever we can do to just say, would you like us to, lend a hand at a fundraising gala? Would you like us to issue a letter of support for grant writing? Would you like help to have us, be connected with other marginalized leaders so that, again, we can build our power and let our voice be clear that things are going to be difficult with federal funding, and the federal funding trickles down to the state funding, which trickles down to the county level, which my experience is that working with our nonprofits is a way for us to create that safety net that everyone needs and deserves.
How did you get the idea in your mind that you want to be mayor of Sebastopol?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, again, kind of digging deep as far as that little gay boy. It's like, I don't know. Do I deserve to run? Will anybody understand my platform? So it's truly humbling to become elected and to serve with great council members and be able to see, it's like, I don't know. Do they trust me into getting into a leadership position? Do they trust me to be vice mayor? And ultimately, do they trust me to be their mayor? So I do the best I can to show that, demonstrate that, I do work collaboratively, and I want to see the needs of our city met in the best possible way. So, yeah.
Yeah, I loved the way you talked about the collaboration with you and the other to council members, lesbians. And so what's your practice, your law practice? So you do the mayor thing, that's probably 40 hours. Where do you find the other 40 hours for your practice? So, and then your personal life. So I'm just curious about that.
Yeah, right now, I mean, like I said, being elected, it is what you make of it. And like I said, I enjoy making the connections. I enjoy being able to lift up others. And so, yeah, it really has taken front burner. And the practice has sort of slipped off to the side. I'm not going to say that I have given it up completely, but I'm very mindful of how much time that I can contribute to that. So right now it's mostly pro bono consultation. So if a parent reaches out and they're like, wow, this is a mess, like something is happening in my school district, my child might be prone to acting out in a way that could get them involved in various systems, and you know, what advice could you provide? And I'm always happy to do that within the boundaries of making sure that, you know, my advice is solid without overextending myself. And so it's a balancing between, you know, being elected, still trying to figure out a way to bring in some type of money through the practice, but then also trying to show up for my partner and be somebody that, you know, a partner would want to continue being with. And then also the joy that I find. But hopefully you're sensing the joy that I find primarily is through helping others. But I still do volunteer for the Humane Society. I love animals. Our little rescue cat is sleeping off to the side of me. So those are the things that bring me joy, you know, being out in nature, looking after animals, those type of things.
Yeah, you mentioned your partner, and we'd love to get into that a little bit more after our music break. But you did bring a song for our music break. Could you tell us the name of the song, who's singing it, and why this song means so much to you?
Yes, it is Cyndi Lauper, who sang Time After Time. And my partner and I were very fortunate to be able to see her in San Francisco. And why Time After Time means a lot is in the fact that, you know, we all explore our sexuality. And when I was leaving school, knowing that I was going to go into the military, I was engaged to be married and to a woman. And it was really sad. Like, I had no idea. I mean, kind of knowing that I was gay, and I'm like, how that was going to unfold, and then how that was going to unfold with me going into the service. At that time in 1984 is very, like, it comes back to me full force when Cyndi came out with that song of Time After Time, and conveying to each other that, you know, no matter what the future holds, we will always be supportive of each other. So that's what I take from that song of always being there time after time. So, yep.
You know, in the 80s, Cyndi Lauper sang that song on TV with Patti LaBelle. And I'll never forget that performance because they both were just so into it and reaching out to each other and perspiring. And one was laying on the piano. I can't remember, but it was like so profound and amazing. And
it was amazing. And it's so funny you bring up Patti LaBelle, because you might know she was just at River Park.
Yeah.
You know, and so we saw her there. So it's interesting that we made all those connections. But yeah, Cyndi, Patti LaBelle, yeah, they're just unparalleled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you for bringing the song and helping us remember this song sung by Cyndi Lauper. And everybody enjoy, and we will see you on the other side.
Bye. secondhand unwind. If you're lost, you can look and you will find me. Time after time, if you fall, I will catch you, I'll be waiting.
Welcome back. That was Cyndi Lauper singing Time After Time. Thank you for bringing that again.
Oh,
it was just so
it.
Great, Stephen. So we ended our last segment with you talking about your partner, and we said, oh, we want to talk about your partner when we come back. So here we are. Why don't you talk to us a little bit about your partner and let us in a little bit about your romance?
Well, thank you. And I'm always like happy to share that because love of my life and a little bit about how we met. I mean, you know, we're not shy to admit it. We met at a gay bar in the Castro, Midnight Sun. And guess what we were watching? Glee. So, I mean, how gay? I mean, really, like how gay could that possibly be? But no, he's very sweet. We met in April of 2010. So that means we just celebrated our 14-year anniversary.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I am very grateful for his ongoing support because everything that I talked about in the prior segment would never have happened without his constant love and support. I'm very, very grateful. And the reason why, I mean, I know you guys offered to have him be part of this interview, but as I sort of stated, he is shy and he's reserved. Public speaking is not... what he enjoys doing. So I was like, okay, but you're all right with me sharing about the beginning of our romance and our ongoing romance. And he was like, of course. So,
well, what's his name?
His name is Jim, and he's a former retired optometrist from Kaiser. So he too was in the helping industry, and he did a lot of good in that area for people. And continues to do a lot of good, and not necessarily in the area of his profession, his retired profession, but he does a lot of ongoing volunteer work. He did volunteer work up until the pandemic at Food for Thought. And just most recently, we were participating in Dining Out for Life together at a local restaurant. So he continues to do that. And I refer to our fur baby, our rescue cat, Ben. So he looks after him. He looks after the house. He's a former master gardener, so he loves being out in our yard and doing what he enjoys. So yeah, overall, the sweetie. So.
Right. And you enjoy, what do you do together for fun?
What we do together is we both enjoy, again, giving back in our respective ways and finding ways that we can actually do the volunteer work. I haven't really connected up with him in what he used to do with Food for Thought, but, you know, supporting him and the friends that he gained in doing that volunteer work. They're very, very solid. And so they get together. In fact, I think they're getting together tomorrow at the Hot Monk to just keep that, you know, connection going. And I wish I could say that I was able to go have another conflict, but we both enjoy, you know, the relationships that we have formed in trying to give back. And so those connections and the people that have grown from that, we derive a lot of enjoyment from that. And, you know, we're both in our own ways enjoying the arts. As I had mentioned before, maybe during our interview or maybe on break, that we enjoy artists like Cyndi Lauper and Tyler LaBelle that we both saw. And we enjoy going out there in our own ways and enjoying that art form. So.
It sounds like you both have like things you like to do together and you have your own lives that you do apart. Some people don't do that. They do everything together. What's your philosophy?
Yeah, I mean, I think that having a balance, as with most things in life, is good. And I really feel grateful for him to allow me to do, you know, the social justice work, to show up at demonstrations, to show up in my current capacity as mayor. And he allows, you know, or encourages me to do all of that. And then, of course, we prioritize having our time together, whether it's just going out or just chilling, watching Netflix or petting our cat or being in the garden. But we have our times. And then, of course, he has his own time to do his special interests, which is a lot of reading. He is a former journalism student and undergraduate. So he has his own ways of nurturing himself. And so, yeah, I think the secret for us is to like not do everything together, because at least for myself, I don't know, I have a tendency to lose myself, you know, in the relationship. And I don't know if that's necessarily the best way, or it's the way that we've found ways to stay connected. Yeah.
So you two are together. Okay. And so I'm curious about when did you know that you were gay? I mean, not no, but what I'm thinking about your coming out. Like, when did you like have to tell somebody? Like your parents? I don't know if you ever told them or not, because and I want to know how they are with you and your relationship. How they, you know, all of that. So, please share.
Yeah, thank you. And yeah, I mean, I don't think I'm alone in the fact that, I mean, I definitely had crushes on boys. And it started early in elementary school. I mean, I remember being in the orchestra, and there was this, you know, another one who played the orchestra. I was like, whoa, you know, clearly I'm feeling a lot towards him and not necessarily, you know, the girls that are in my class. But definitely sensing. I think we all have that ability to sense. It's like, is this safe? And if it's not, what's my exit plan? And growing up where I grew up, there was no exit plan. So you just suppressed, you suppressed, you suppressed, and more, you suppressed. And to answer your question about when I came out, it wasn't until I was in, well, of course, I mean, as I alluded to in the earlier segment, when I was in the military and found ways to come out in my own way off base. So I started to kind of get like what the gay community was like, but it wasn't until I launched out of the military and started law school that I was dating, having feelings, those type of things. But yeah, with like a lot of families, things are safe or things are not safe. And as I alluded to, my mother was very religious, full on Catholic, and then my father, and then she all of a sudden full on Baptist and very much a fundamentalist. And like, you know, watching TV shows growing up when I was 14, Alice, when there was a gay character, it's like, yeah, you do know that that gay character's got to go to hell, right? And I was like, Lord. Okay. So clearly that wasn't top of my priority to talk with her about it. But then I did meet a boyfriend when I was in law school and got enough of courage to at least tell my father. And my father had various reactions when I was hemming and hawing. Now that he's dead, I don't know, I could maybe say something, but I probably won't, because you don't want to ever diminish anyone. But ultimately, he did come around. And before he died, he definitely met my current partner and was very open, very gracious. So I think there is truth to the matter that people evolve over time. So there's that. But my mother, yes, before she died, I was clear with her, and it was still like, well, this is a choice, and hell and brimstone, and good luck in hell, and all of that. So that was the way that ended. So yeah, we all go through what we go through.
So we all do our chosen family sometimes. You have a chosen family besides Jim?
Of course, you latch onto people that are, you just feel are your fellow tribes people. And when you latch onto them, you never let them go. So, there are people that I've met in different stages of my life, and I feel very fortunate that, even though we don't, share physical space, we do social media, we text the highlights of our lives. And whenever we can really, get together in physical space, it's very rewarding. And it's as if there was no time passed. So yeah, we definitely have our own chosen family, because my partner's older, and his parents have long since deceased, and he has some distant relatives, but we definitely feel the importance of making sure that we find our tribe and we hang on to them, and we feel very happy and supported having that extended chosen family.
So getting back to San Francisco, you meet Jim, you're in law school. And how do you find your way to a little town like Sebastopol? How long have you lived in Sebastopol?
That's always a good story, because yes, we met in San Francisco, and a prior partner and I got a place, bought a house in Guerneville. And we were together a number of years, and then things happened and we distanced ourselves, and then that relationship ended. And I had that house. And when Jim and I got together, we spent time in Guerneville, and we really, really have very fond memories of Guerneville and living out in the West County. Developed a lot of friends that we still maintain contact with. And with that being said, we always look forward to date night when we could go to Sebastopol. As you know, there are a few more restaurants and being gay, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't say gay and being foodies, but we are. And so we enjoyed coming to Sebastopol and making it a date night, going to the Rialto and catching a movie and then, a meal and then going home. And so we always, loved Sebastopol. And then when we're getting up in age, it was a concern about medical services and how long it would take for people to come help us in Guerneville, and that it would be shorter distance if we moved closer to the 101. So there were a number of different reasons why we landed here, and we've been here going on 8 years. And when I came in, I just wanted to continue to volunteer to help this community. And so I did. I went right on the Sebastopol, website. I was like, where are the volunteer opportunities? And one of them was to be a library commissioner, appointed by the city council to the Sonoma County Library Commission. And that was my foyer into what is it like to be a quasi-elected? What are the Brown Act? What is the Brown Act? How do bodies function? And so that was fun. And then a group of people, approached me when there was the elections coming up, this most, not the most recent one, but the cycle before, about like, what do you think about running? And I'm like, sure, with your support. Let's see where this goes.
Wow, I'm thinking about this shy little boy in Indiana, just rising and rising and rising and rising up. And now you're the face of Sebastopol. I mean,
a beautiful face, by the way.
Aww. Yes.
But thank you.
Stephen, were you shy? I'm just throwing that out there, but it just seems like you traveled up the mountain. Now you up there. It's like,
Well, thank you. But it is a, you know, as I always say, it's a team sport. Like, I would not be anywhere near positioned enough to take this all on without Jim's support. And then even being on council, you know, the bottom line of being on council is to further the business of city, to make sure that its residents are, that you try to make it so that every resident feels like they get what they deserve. And so it takes a unified perspective on that. And then to be able to demonstrate that with your electeds where they're like, okay, we trust you. So we'll elevate you from being council to vice mayor and then ultimately to mayor. But as I always say, it's a team sport. You know, it's just not about you and your ego, because my experience is you're not going to get very far doing that angle.
So how long have you been mayor?
My goodness. This is Tuesday, right? The day sort of all merged. It was literally like a week ago that I was elevated from vice mayor to mayor. So I guess I can say that, you know, depending on how many hours are left in the day, I think I survived my first week. So,
Right.
Wow, look at you. 1 week. Wow, is it l like you expected it to be? I mean, you're vice mayor, so I don't know what other duties on top of that would make you mayor, but.
yeah, no, I mean, it's like it's the same amount of responsibilities. And I think that with the mayor and our most recent past city protocols, it is clear that the mayor may be the spokesperson, but whatever we do and engage with the media, it is to be coordinated also with our general manager, assistant general manager, in some cases our city attorney. So I think that is probably the newest aspect to the job, is making sure that we speak in a unified way when we engage with the media. So that might be the newest add-on thing, but
So I'm just thinking about the LGBTQ community in Sonoma County and your opinion about it. Do you have feelings about it? What work that needs to be done to enhance our lives better, to come together as a community better, to support each other? What would you say about your experience in Sonoma County as a gay man?
yeah, I mean, you know, as I was saying before, we all come from various parts and we have our various experiences. But given the climate that we're in, and I'm not going to be shy about it, we're just going to put it out there. Our current climate that we have found ourselves in, for me, it is renewed a sense of urgency that we really do need to do the best we can to work in solidarity with other marginalized communities, because I just don't think being in the queer community and having that be your sole identity is going to work well for us. I just don't think it's true. So I gravitate towards leaders in our community that have that intersectionality perspective. And if they don't, then as they say, we all have limited amount of time and limited amount of energy. I'm not going to put it forth into other leaders who do not take that perspective of the world about how to rise this all up and to try to meet all of our needs. And I'll say it right now, the crisis is not a shock with our undocumented parts of our community. I mean, we might be queer, but I know plenty of queers that find themselves in that situation without having papers. And the rumblings have rightfully very, very much upset them. And it's very troubling to know people that are experiencing that, especially queers with families and with children. I mean, what does that mean? So that's a sense of urgency for me. And our trans brothers and sisters, I mean, they heard it all the way through the campaign leading up to the most recent election. And they're terrified. And I think that they have a right to be terrified, because as it goes around on social media, it's like, if you have not ever experienced having the Supreme Court decide what rights you get and what rights you don't get, then that's called privilege. And I 100% subscribe to that, because the Supreme Court has heard the arguments from Tennessee about what trans youth can get and what they can't get, and what their similarly situated cisgendered youth can get. It's troubling and it's quite alarming. So right now, that is where my energy is, where it's like, how are we going to support our undocumented brothers and sisters, queer or not queer. And same with our trans brothers and sisters. We're all of a certain age. I think we remember when we first came out. And it was like, you're either gay or you're lesbian. And that's it. That's all. It took us a while to extend to the rest of the alphabet, you know, the bi, the trans, the intersex. I mean, it took us a while. And so I think in our community in Sonoran County, I feel like it's still sometimes a struggle to think outside of our silos, of outside of like, we're just going to focus on being queer. So again, I gravitate towards finding those leaders in our community, and I hope I've been successful in trying to connect those leaders together to take that intersectional approach of like, we need to surround each other to protect each other, because otherwise it's going to be sad. I mean, what are we going to do? Look at one of our queer siblings that are undocumented and like, we're not going to feel for their lives and their families being ripped apart and being deported to another country that they might not have even ever lived in, you know? And what are we going to do? Look at our trans brothers and sisters and be like, oh yeah, so you are used to being able to get this medication. But guess what? You're not able to get that medication again. I mean, I don't know how we're going to move forward unless we see all of that.
Wow. Thank you for that introspective answer. Really appreciate it. I'm just thinking about coming together as a community of all marginalized people. I was in a meeting recently with Black leaders, and we're trying to get all these different Black organizations to come together, because we're also thinking about 2025 as well. And I love what you're saying, Stephen, about the immigration situation, and that we all got to come together and unite. I mean, Sonoma County is all about that. Most of Sonoma County is about coming together in our diversity.
I mean, I hope so, but I'm just going to say what it is from my perspective. That might be true, but I don't know who's saying that. So I'm just going to try to keep it real. I mean, and I would be interested in knowing who's saying that, because I'm not hearing it. I connect and surround myself by people like Kirsten Lang, the president of our NAACP, because she has embraced so much so the intersectionality that I am proud to say that I am their chair of their criminal justice section. She speaks that. The executive director of Latino Service Providers, she speaks that. There's a lovely woman, unfortunately, I'm spacing her name, that centers disability. She speaks that. But I'm going to say it, and it's not like people will be shocked. Sonoma County Pride. Are they? I don't see any press releases from their executive director. I don't know. I'd be welcome to find the organization that actually has spoken up about intersectionality, because maybe I'm missing it. And if I missed it, please, after this chat, send me their names, because I don't see them, and I don't hear them saying it out loud. And I certainly don't see any press releases.
Cater. But no, I'm just talking in general. I just know different people are organizing, and we would like to see all the black community to at least come together under one roof to organize. But we would love to organize. Me, myself, would love to be accepted by all the other groups as well, and to be looked after. You know what I'm saying?
I do hear that, and I take the lead from Kirsten Lang, who is one who's very bright, and she's very committed. And they're like, her perspective is that she has stated to me and other city electeds in Sebastopol, I will not come and accept a city proclamation for, you know, honoring in any way the Black community, because I need to see you walk the walk. Are you a member of the NAACP as an organization? Are you a member of GLARE, which is the national group of electeds to advance racial equity? Are you or are you not? And unless you can say that you are, no, I am not about showing up for a photo op for you. So there are a lot of similarly situated electeds that are like, you know, I want to move forward, and I want to move forward with those that get intersectionality. and you're either on board or you're not, because I got limited time. My people are suffering and I got limited time. So I would love to see those leaders. I would love to see the executive director, the board president of Sonoma County Pride. This is not going to be shocking news to them, because I have spoken to their board members, some of them, and there are open positions. And I would like to see a lot of us step up and say that if you want to elect me onto your board, know full well that I'm going to take this intersectional approach. And if you don't like it, then don't vote for me to be on your board. So at this point in time, I am old and I have a limited amount of time. So I'm just going to call it the way I see it.
And you've spoken to them already about this.
I have spoken to one board member many years ago, and most recently, one of their current board members, who are like, well, you know, we have openings. And I'm like, well, you know, I would be interested, but they need to know what they're getting. And I might just be too vocal for them.
Wow. It's wonderful to hear all your passion, though, Thank Stephen. You. It's just fantastic. And I think people listening to this interview, maybe their eyes are being opened a little bit. And getting to know you and your personal life, I think, you know, people will know who you are now if they didn't already. So we want to thank you so much for being on our show tonight. Are there words of wisdom that you'd like to leave with us?
And yes, I hope that if people do listen to this, that they will take away, like, yes, there are strong proponents for taking an intersectional approach. And if anything, I hope they also take away the fact that if you have limited amount of time and limited amount of energy, I would really encourage you to find your local youth organization, as you two have done. Lend support to strong, courageous women who have fostered so many children. Learn about the type of children that they took in. Learn about the systems that are supposedly trying to help youth, but ultimately may do more harm than good in these various systems. And reach out and be involved and try to create a happier life for all the queer, trans, BIPOC, differently abled youth. So I'll leave it at that.
Wow. Thank you so much, Stephen. I love your passion, like Cher said. Yeah, I love it. I feel warm inside. I feel like energized. Like I gotta do something now. So hopefully our listeners are being able to take this in. So thank you.
We want everyone to remember that, just like Stephen, you too can be living proof that through being visible and vibrant and perseverant and finding your niche, you too can make this world a better world. This is Diana and Sheridan, and we will be back next month. Until then, good night.
I step out of the ordinary. I can feel my soul ascending. I'm on my way. Can't stop me now. And you can.
CBFM comes from listeners and from Rocky, the free-range chicken, and Rosie, the original organic chicken. Air-chilled, so non-GMO, locally raised right here in Sonoma County, with no antibiotics ever. More information is available at rockyandrosie.com.
Realize that to question
104.9 KRCBFM Rock Park and KRCGFM Windsor, Sonoma County's NPR station.
So I stand
it's
out of the
stay with us, the jazz pop is next.